Some 3 million Iraqis are living in precarious conditions in countries throughout the Middle East and elsewhere, having fled war and terrible sectarian violence at home. At least 70,000 Iraqis have sought refuge in Lebanon, a country of only 4 million people. And though the nation is valiantly attempting to cope with the influx, it is suffering skyrocketing inflation, severe political instability, a wave of bombings and militant activity, and the after effects of a war with Israel in 2006. Sister Toni Harris, International Justice and Peace Coordinator for the Dominican Order, has recently returned from a fact-finding mission to Lebanon and Syria. She was part of a delegation of religious invited by Catholic Relief Services to meet Iraqi refugees and view their living conditions in order to advocate on their behalf when they returned home. Sister Toni says Middle Eastern countries like Syria, Jordan, and Lebanon are suffering the fallout of the U.S.-led war in Iraq and the lack of a strategy to pull the country back together. In Lebanon, Sister Toni saw entire Iraqi families living in squalid one- or two-room apartments, those lucky to find them. Others were among detainees in a big detention center in Beirut. Catholic charities like Caritas are doing their best to meet their needs, but, she says, it's not enough.
One of the first stops that we made in Beirut was with the Chaldean bishop, the Catholic. I mean, this is a rite of the church in union with Rome. These are our Catholic brothers and sisters, and this particular church is trying to respond to the Iraqi refugees because, of course, many of them are members of the Chaldean church, and maybe people came hoping that the church would be able to help them. You know, it's
would that be
know.
The first their first door that they knock on, the church?
I think for the Christians it probably is, and I mean, like many people who are desperate, certainly people learn to look for every possible resource and every possible help that might be available to them. But certainly I think the expectation that Christians have that somehow the rest of the Christian community couldn't possibly ignore them, I think that's part of the discouragement, is that even though the church is trying to help, you know, it's certainly not enough in the face of the number of people and the problem.
What is the answer? I mean, these people, they arrive in Beirut, they're living in underground or ground level shacks, small apartments all crowded into one small space. They don't have any source of income. Maybe they're even spending what little money that they brought with them from Iraq on rent. How are they surviving? And what is the answer?
Well, I think that what you're saying is absolutely true. This was described to us that, you know, the first wave of refugees from Iraq were people who had more resources. They were either wealthier people to begin with, and they could afford to leave and to take financial resources with them, and they were able to live on those resources for a while. And then the economic class, if you will, started to drop downwards. People who had fewer resources came, until finally very poor people came just trying to save their lives in the sectarian and violent kind of situation that's continued to develop in Iraq. So the solution is very hard to describe or to identify. When we think about the fact that there are 70,000 approximately, and again, how does anybody know these numbers? You know, they're very hard to determine. Some of the UN tries to do registration of people, and then that makes them eligible for some services, a box of food every 2 months or something like that. You know, they're able to get some services. But so the UN has numbers only of the registered people, which is a fraction of the number estimated in countries. So you've got 70,000 in Lebanon, perhaps 750,000 in Jordan, and the estimates in Syria were over 1.5 million. So we have, what, close to approaching 3 million people outside their country displaced, 2.5 million anyway. And then we have all the displaced people inside the country. And people that we talked to said, you know, if they're able to go back, they can't go back. Their homes aren't there. It's not like their house that they left is there waiting for them. Their houses have either been destroyed or taken over by other folks. So to go back requires, it seems to me, first of all, some kind of feeling of security. And people don't feel secure. If people go back and even the acting ambassador, that's not actually his title, it's sort of agent in charge, in Syria, for the United States presence there, the mission there, said to the group, it's important that people don't think this problem is going away. This problem is not solved. Even if we think 10,000, which sounds like a lot of people, 10,000 people go back to Iraq, that's infinitesimally small percentage of the total number of people who are displaced and who are still in a refugee kind of situation, you know. So given the fact that these folks are Middle Eastern, it would be very nice if there were a way to integrate them in Middle Eastern countries, to have them be welcomed and be, I mean, they've certainly been welcomed, but to have them be legalized in some of the Middle Eastern countries would be great.
But however, most, I would imagine that most people are hoping beyond hope that they will be one day able to go back to their own country.
It would need a tremendous amount of change in the country that Iraq has become. Most of the people that we've talked to and other people that I've talked to who have lived in Iraq describe the country as very different than the country they grew up in. I mean, certainly you think people want to go back to their homeland. And it may be that if Sunni or Shia groups are in particular neighborhoods, people may, if they belong to those particular groups, they may feel safe going back to that neighborhood. But according to most Iraqis, that kind of distinction between Muslim groups and between Muslims and Christians was not dominant in anybody's mind before the U.S. invasion. And people lived as neighbors, lived next door to each other. People looked after each other, watched out for each other, worked with each other. Now, it's my understanding that many of the more moderate people in any group have fled if they could. And because of the lack of planning by the U.S. government and without any border controls, extremists have come to dominate the country. It's not the same country, I think, that people left. So to go back, you know, I mean, to go back to what, in a sense, is their question, I think. Certainly people like to be at home and where their families are and where they grew up. That's certainly most of our first choice, but
you were saying that you thought a just solution to the refugee problem would be for the Arab countries to absorb many of these Iraqi refugees, give them citizenship or at least rights to have a job and have access to health care and schools and so on. What do you think about the U.S.'s policy on accepting Iraqi refugees?
Well, I don't mean to be interpreted to think that or to say that the whole responsibility is the Arab countries. The Arab countries, it seems to me, in the vicinity of Iraq have been doing a remarkable good deed, if you will, to try to absorb this Arab brothers and sisters, sort of this pan-Arab kind of identity in the country. When you think of the fact that Syria, which is a state about the size of North Dakota in the United States, with 19 million people or so, has absorbed 1.8 million, possibly, refugees, and now is suffering tremendous inflation, tremendous real estate escalation, all these problems, but are still trying to be hospitable, for the most part, to refugees. It's an amazing example. I don't know that the Arab states can be expected to do all of the absorbing. The problem is removing people from the Middle East who basically want to be in the Middle East, I think, and who have their roots and connections there. But certainly the United States and I think the other countries that were part of the coalition and other countries that may have just the goodwill to try to help with this human crisis need to accept more refugees for resettlement in other countries. We learned in both Lebanon and Syria that the UN High Commissioner for Refugees has prepared and has screened, I think they told us, a total of about 13 or 14,000 refugees who are screened already, waiting, according to the requirements that the United States gave the UN High Commissioner. And now it's up to the United States to do, I think it's two more rounds of processing people to try to identify the 12,000 that the U.S. is willing to take. So, unfortunately, it seems like some people in the U.S. are trying to say the UN isn't working fast enough to get refugees screened for us to do the next screening. But that was not the case in terms of what we observed. The UN has people screened according to U.S. criteria, and now the Homeland Security need to screen people so that at least 12,000 people can be placed in the United States. So I think especially the countries, primarily the U.S., that created this problem have got to face the responsibility of absorbing some of these almost 3 million people that have had to flee their country because of the violence, and either the initial violence or the violence that's resulted because of the chaos and lack of planning for a stable government in the country.
Sister Toni Harris is International Justice and Peace Coordinator for the Dominican Order.